High technology, that's what we're talking with Samuel Arbesman about, and we're going to take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, overcomplicated as we talk about technology at the limits of comprehension. Samuel Arbesman with us, and we are going to take your calls as well. But Samuel, you were talking about your grandfather. He was into sci-fi. Tell us the story.
Oh, yeah. So we were discussing how, how quickly we forget these sort of amazing advances of our technologies. Yeah, so my grandfather is actually turning 99 soon. He's been reading science fiction since essentially the modern dawn of the genre. And I have this memory of when the iPhone came out, I believe he and my father, we went to the Apple store soon afterwards to test out one of these iPhones. And I can remember my grandfather playing with it, and he said, like, this is it. Like, this is the object that he had been reading about in science fiction. And it's unbelievable that many advances that we have long thought as kind of the realm of fantasy or fiction are now very real. And there's many things we have not quite done. And we don't have warp drive, things like that.
We're going to get there.
There are many other things. Yeah, hopefully. We'll see.
Do you remember the Jetsons TV show, or were you not born or too young?
I'm too young. I am familiar with it, though.
Okay. See, they had picture TV sets, and people just looked at that going, what? And Dick Tracy, remember him with his little smartwatch and everything else?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
So who had the brain in those cartoons to come up with that? They had the vision. How did they do that?
So I would say, perhaps a more kind of cynical way to say it is that they made a lot of predictions, and only a certain amount of them hit. And we remember the really good ones, and we don't remember the ones that were not as accurate. We have yet to have a car that folds up into a briefcase.
Or really flies. We don't have the real flying
exactly.
car yet.
We don't have flying cars yet. And it's not entirely clear if we're actually going to be that good at driving in three dimensions. We might be a self-driving version of that. But I think, one of the most powerful features of kind of science fiction is kind of envisioning scenarios. Is seeing the different, the huge number of permutations and combinations of things that we can actually have. And then allowing those kinds of visions to inspire the people who are really building the future. And this is, my understanding is that there's a very clear path between the communicator from the original Star Trek and the person who eventually created the flip phone for Motorola. He was inspired by the design from the original Star Trek. And I want to make a cell phone that looks like this. And there are many other cases where scientists and technologists are inspired by ideas from science fiction novels, science fiction movies, television shows, more generally, sometimes it just might inspire a scientist to actually, a young person to get involved in science and try to make new things. And sometimes they might actually be inspired to try to make the things that they read about as a child and really bring them into reality. And some of the things people find out are not always possible. But at the same time, though, there are many people trying things that once seem the realm of fiction. So, like, for example, in Jurassic Park, we think the idea of bringing back extinct species, for a long time, this seemed fairly fantastical. And now there are many scientists thinking very seriously about whether or not it's possible to bring back a woolly mammoth or a passenger pigeon. And these are very exciting things. And, of course, there's many implications about what would that mean? How would it fit within the larger ecosystem? But the fact that we are on the cusp of actually having these technologies and these abilities is something that I think many people fail to be properly excited by and properly given to a sense of wonder. And too often we just really, we become accustomed to these things and we take too much of this for granted. And I think we are living in an age of wonders and we should recognize that. And I think sometimes reading science fiction is a good way of seeing actually how far we have come.
How did you, Samuel, get involved in all of this?
So I read science fiction, and I was perhaps either through science fiction or just kind of reading science, and just kind of my childhood, my family always encouraged questioning, so I got involved in science. And so my training began actually. I have a PhD in computational biology, essentially computational models and mathematical models of biological systems. I started more in, computational evolutionary biology, understanding how populations evolve over time and how the how their genes kind of change in frequency. And then I began thinking more broadly about using computational and quantitative and mathematical approaches to just understanding large complex systems in general, whether or not they are biological, whether or not they're technological, whether there's patterns within society, or understanding how cities grow and change. And so I just began to be interested in kind of understanding whether or not there are rules and regularities to science and technology as a whole. And that got me interested in kind of, yeah, thinking about these trends and the kinds of things that we talked about, kind of these cutting-edge technologies, these cutting-edge scientific advances. And, yeah, and that was, I guess, how I got involved in all of this.
That's amazing. Amazing work. Let's go to the phones. Charlie in Tupac, Arizona. Welcome to the show. Charlie, go ahead.
Oh, Jerry, Steve. Steve, were you by any chance
Sam,
the author of When Technology Fails?
No.
I was not.
Okay, I didn't catch the whole bio. My question is, what current technologies do we have to protect the power grid?
That's something that is dear to our heart, Samuel. We think the power grid should be insulated to protect it against a solar flare or an EMP attack, electromagnetic pulse. Do you know anything that's out there in terms of technology to try to do that for us?
So, unfortunately, I don't know about what technologies are there to kind of to protect the grid. At the same time, though, it's not because I'm very familiar with that area, and I've surveyed it all, and there's nothing, and I have not seen anything there. In fact, this is outside of what I am very familiar with, and so I have to plead my ignorance and say, unfortunately, don't know enough to answer your question either way.
What has been, for you, in this field, the most exciting thing you've seen in the last 5 years, let's say?
So we just kind of in the realm of, like, technological...
Yeah.
Technological,
I mean, I would say smartphones and what they do, but what do you think?
Oh, certainly that. I would say smartphones, but I think one of the other interesting trends, and we're seeing this and touching upon every aspect of our lives increasingly, is just the renaissance in the realm of artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence and kind of making computer models of things that can do computers that can do intelligent things, very broadly construed. That field of AI has kind of gone through a number of booms and busts throughout its history. And for a long time, people thought that all the low hanging fruit had been taken. There weren't that many easy advances, and in particular, the whole realm of neural networks had sort of been on the back burner. And through the confluence of much better algorithms, much better computer techniques, much better hardware, so we now have much faster computers, as well as new types of chips that can actually do very advanced techniques, as well as huge amounts of data that we can now pour into these computer models. Because of those three trends, neural networks and certain techniques within artificial intelligence are now back in vogue. And not only are they back in vogue, they're enormously powerful, where we can have everything from like computer-generated text that actually seems very human-like, to the ability to recognize images in a very, very powerful way, and in some cases, sometimes recognizing, categorizing images better than humans can, which is kind of astonishing to think that kind of thing is possible. There's been a huge number of advances in machine translation, the idea of advances related to being able to translate from one language to another. I don't think those have been using kind of some of the newer advances in the realm of deep learning and those kind of various techniques. But there's been a huge number of advances in artificial intelligence recently, and I think that's really changing how we think about what computers can actually do. And there are, I would say, certainly limits currently, and there are many hard problems. And it's I don't want to say too flippantly that now kind of everything is possible, but there are certainly many, many things that are now possible that even a few years ago, no one thought computers could do that quickly. And so, for example, we knew that computers were really good at chess, but for many years, people thought that the game Go would be immune to computers winning. And very rapidly, and kind of over the past year, Go has now fallen to computers through these new advances in artificial intelligence. So I think that's kind of very exciting to see how rapidly this is changing and progressing.
How does the brain power of humans push this technology? That fascinates me too, Samuel. the fact that humans are the ones that are fueling this change. How do they come up with this?
I think that's in some ways the most optimistic and empowering feature of it, the idea that even though these computers might eclipse us in certain of our abilities, the fact that we are the ones building these things is enormously powerful. But I think one of the ways that humans are doing this is they create the conditions for the machine to learn, and sometimes to learn against in a game, it might even play against itself and it can constantly improve. And so the ability to have constantly improving algorithms, human created, of course, is very exciting. And I think that that kind of insight, the idea that you don't have to hard code everything and say this is exactly how the computer's going to behave, you now create the conditions for a system to improve. I think that's really a fascinating thing that we now have available.
Next up, we go to William in Little Washington, North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hey, William, go ahead.
Yes, sir, George. How you doing this?
Good, week? William. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I kind of hate to be the harbinger of doom here, but one can't help but ask, when should mankind become scared of technology?
True. That's a good question.
Because, you know, I'm 25 years old, and I come from an extensive military and family. And I had an uncle who retired as a lieutenant colonel, and he often told me, he said, you need to be afraid of what they don't tell you about. And the reason why I personally have a fear of the advancement of certain fields of technology is because something as simple as this, game systems. Now, I'm not a big video gamer, but I have a little knack for technology. This technology, like as far as Nintendo, Sega Genesis, stuff like that, that was not new technology at the time that it was released. And, you know, one has to stop and say, why is this stuff made to purposely go obsolete? What plan do they have with this technology?
See, I think obsolescence is for money. They want products to break down. They don't want them to last forever. You know, in the old days, Samuel, my mom used to tell me about her Maytag washing machine. The thing lasted forever. You don't have that anymore. They break down fast, refrigerators.
I'm not sure if it's kind of this idea of like planned obsolescence where a company is like hoping that the fact that the system is going to break down. And certainly within technology, and one of the reasons things become obsolete is when you have multiple different companies competing, they want to render another company's product obsolete. And so you get this escalating arms race of technological advances. And of course, who benefits? The consumer. We constantly get to have new and better technologies. Now, of course, it requires us to purchase them. And so it might seem like, okay, we're spending a lot more money. But there are certainly many more advances, and it's often because there's this wonderful competition where people want to make better products and better technologies. And I think that ends up resulting in things becoming obsolete, but in the end means that we have much more sophisticated technologies at our disposal.
When does the technology start to hurt us?
When does it hurt us? I think overall technology is certainly not, I would not say like technology as a whole is out there to hurt us. I think for most people, when they kind of think about technologies and its harmful effects, there's certainly, we have to be conscious of kind of the upsides and the downsides of technology. Talking technology and kind of the way it's designed can be for good or for bad. But I think more when people kind of worry about technology, oftentimes it's a certain amount of like fear of the unknown, and fear of the potential of what is there. And oftentimes the more you understand technologies as best you can, of course, sometimes it's not fully possible to understand all these things. But the more you understand them, oftentimes there's less of a concern and kind of this like generic fear and more just of like, oh wow, these things are enormously messy. Let's just do our best to grapple with them and make sure they're not particularly buggy as opposed to they're out to get us or anything like that. And I think oftentimes kind of the fear of technology and the fear of unknown can be best combated by just striving to better understand these systems.
Do you see the day, I mean, we just saw that case in Dallas where a robot blew up the perpetrator. Do you see a day where military will send in many, many robots instead of human beings into battle?
It's certainly a potential. It would be very interesting to see where one scenario one could envision, and this is the kind of thing, kind of returning to our discussion about science fiction, like this is kind of one of the places where you can see some of these scenarios. One could envision a scenario where it's robot armies fighting each other, where humans kind of are on the sideline, and it'd be almost the equivalent of like deciding wars on the outcome of video games, in some ways. And certainly, automation is involved in the military, but it would be tough to kind of speculate exactly what the clear direction is. I think returning to science fiction, of by surveying all the different possible scenarios, we can begin to think about how society should think about this and should respond. I don't necessarily have a clear vision of what the future holds. I don't think anyone should have a single vision of what the future holds. I certainly think it's better to just be armed with multiple different scenarios to at least be better prepared.
I mean, I could see, being in venture capital, I can see companies that build, let's say, armies, robotic armies. That's their company. The company builds robotic armies by the hundreds of thousands and then sells them to governments all over the planet.
So I don't think there's any startup that sophisticated yet.
But it will be.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't worry about it right now.
Let's go to San Diego. Say is with us on Coast to Coast. Say, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Yes, yeah, actually Faye.
Thanks,
Faye. George.
Okay.
So I have two parts to my comments. The first one is I feel like the gap is getting bigger between older people and younger people. 40, 50 years ago, they sat down at the dinner table together, they did things together, and the parents knew more than their children. Now it seems they do different things, and it seems that the children know more than the parents now. And I don't have children, but I'm 57, and I don't participate too fast in technology. I have a cell phone, but not a smartphone, things like that. And my concern is that one day I wake up, open my door, and the world is operating at a level which I am not operating on, and I can't cope. And this kind of world I can't live in,
It's just beyond you.
Yeah, beyond me, right? So that's one part of it. And the other part deals with the spiritual center. I like to study meditation and yoga, and I feel that technology takes us away from our spiritual center. The iPhone is God now. They're looking at their iPhone. They're not going within, like Buddha said, let's meditate, let's open our eyes, let's wake up instead of artificial and virtual. Everything that, seems to be going in that direction instead of real and truth with a big T.
Well, you might be right on both fronts, and we'll talk with Samuel about that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, and of course, those of you who have been listening to the program for the past month or so, you know about our live event in Asheville, North Carolina. It is August 27th, and tickets available by going to our website, coasttocoastam.com. You click the picture of the Asheville event at the highlight reel. It'll take you straight there, and then you just start looking for us. We're the August 27th event. Come on out if you're in that area. Originally I was just saying if you're in the Asheville, North Carolina area, come on out. Come on out from all over the place, and let's enjoy ourselves, have a great time. We've got a meet and greet scheduled afterwards. It's going to be a fun event. And welcome back to Coast, Samuel Arbisman with us. His book, Overcomplicated. Where do you get the book, by the way, Sam?
You can buy it everywhere. But
I like that.
Yeah.
All right, so Shay.
Wherever books are sold.
Shay was asking two questions. One, she's concerned she's going to open up her door one day and see that the entire world has technologically changed on her. Is that going to be possible? Does it happen that quickly, theoretically?
Certainly the world is changing rapidly, but I think there's a certain amount of perspective we need to have. And if you look, even though it certainly does feel things are changing rapidly, and perhaps even more rapidly than before, I think every generation has helped us to a certain degree. I mean, even if you look back at, like, ancient Greece, Socrates was lamenting the fact that we now have that he had the written word and memory wasn't what it used to be. And so I think in every generation, people think that things are changing very, very rapidly. So I think there's a certain amount of perspective we need to have, that certainly things are changing and we have to do our best to adapt to them. But there's also this tendency to feel that whatever you grew up with and are comfortable with is fleeting. And I think that might very well be true, but that's the same thing it's always been in centuries past or even millennia past. And so there is always change. It's probably more rapid now than it was before. But I think one of the things that it seems that humanity is particularly good at is adapting. And adapting so quickly that going back to the iPhone discussion, we even forget how magical some of the devices and technologies we have are. So I think we're good. We are good at adapting. And I wouldn't be too concerned about that kind of thing.
And she's concerned, though, that technology is taking us away from spirituality. What do you think?
So, I mean, it depends how we use our technology. And technology can make us more present in the world. It can take us away. I mean, so certainly there are tools that might make us feel more isolated, maybe taking us away from nature or from our fellow people. At the same time, though, there are many powerful technologies like Skype or FaceTime or kind of video chat in general. These are the kind of things, especially in our country where people are highly mobile or moving around the country, this is a way of actually maintaining connections and allowing children to talk to their grandparents if they're no longer in the same city. These are very, very powerful tools and technologies that actually allow us to remain connected with other people or remain more present in the world. And the same thing, she mentioned in certain aspects of like spirituality and meditation, there are in fact phone apps to allow for meditation. So I think it really comes down to kind of how we pick and choose what technologies we want, and whether or not we do it in kind of a haphazard way, or whether or not we're fairly mindful and intentional about it. And so I think there are certainly technologies that can make us feel more disconnected from our fellow people, more disconnected from the world around us. But there are also many technologies that actually make it better and enrich the experience we would otherwise want to have. And so I think there's both good and bad, and it's really how we view it. And I think there, in this case, if we choose and are mindful about it, we can actually find some very good technologies that make us more present in the world.
I think so, too. You know, last night I had a guest on, Samuel, who is a privacy expert, and she's also a biblical scholar. And she's concerned that technology is pushing us to the sign of the beast, the apocalypse. And she might be right, but, I mean, she thinks one day that mankind will be compelled to put a little chip in your hand or somewhere, and that's how you're going to be able to use your credit. There's going to be no more money, no more need for credit cards. You just kind of wave your hand right over a reader, and there you go. And she thinks technology is really pushing us that way with implantable chips. What do you think?
I mean, ultimately, technology is not this kind of thing that's happening independently of people. And certainly, we're the ones building these technologies. And it's really all about the choices we make and the kinds of things we choose to adopt. It's not as if we're going to have no choice in these matters. And certainly, some of these trends are happening very rapidly, and they feel sometimes inexorable. But at the same time, as a society, we have the option of figuring out the kind of choices we want to make and the types of technologies we choose to adopt. And I think as long as we are intentional about it, we can make those decisions and say, are these the kinds of things we want to have, and are they not? And I think there are many cases where certain technologies by large corporations, and they'll unveil some technology, and it might flop because people realize it doesn't actually fit with what they do. And so I don't think it's this kind of this inevitability of every technology that is developed is going to be adopted. We certainly have the option to try them, but people, as long as they're intentional about it, we don't have to use everything, and we don't have to have this kind of end goal that really is kind of goes counter to the kinds of things that people would want. And if it really does go counter to the kinds of things that people want, ideally, people will not actually adopt it.
Let's go to Ketchikan, Alaska. We've got Aaron west of the Rockies with us. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for calling.
Well, hello.
Hi.
I have a statement, and then, well, I don't know. Anyway, you keep talking about bringing up the self-driving car, and I figured that out 30 years ago, and certainly 20 years ago, the technology was perfected, and it doesn't have to be as complicated as it is, as where they're trying to go. They're trying to make it way too complicated. It's not that hard.
You came up with the self-driving car?
Of course. Well, I wouldn't have said it if I didn't.
I mean, where'd the tech? Why didn't you sell the technology? What happened to it?
Well, I still have it.
Oh, but you didn't go public with it.
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Wasn't the right time. But the thing of it is what I believe these, you know, the manufacturing companies do is they make things so complicated that you can't work on the object without going to their special school or whatever it is.
You need them. They have to service it.
Say again?
They have to service it because you won't be able to. That's what they want.
Yes. And that's what they want. And I mean, it happens in, right now I'm in a mechanical thing and I'm looking at, I told a very old and wise friend of mine, well, he's not that old, but he's pretty wise. He's a wise guy.
Better to be wise than old, I think.
I told him about this project I'm doing, and I'm going like, what kind of fiend would ever put a cast aluminum bolt, a cast aluminum thing, to a cast iron thing in a marine environment? You get dissimilar metal galvanization. Basically welds them together, and he's going, well, yes, it serves its design. It makes the people pay for a technician at, you know, $100 an hour to go work on the thing.
I'm surprised though that you held on to this technology and never came out with it.
Well, it's easy. It's not that complicated. Okay, it requires very little computing.
You
so I'm not going to actually go into the nuts and bolts.
No, I know that. We don't have
it's
time for that.
Something that I came up with while I was trying to go to sleep at night.
20 years ago?
Actually, 30. But
jeez,
we've made progress. 30 years ago, I came up with the idea, and 20 years ago, it was possible.
And now, Samuel, had he gone to a venture capital firm like Lux Capital with the idea, you might have financed him, huh?
I would have been very interested to learn more. I certainly want to hear more about it.
Especially 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Amazing. Go public with that. Oh, well. What else is on the horizon that you know about that we don't?
I know about that no one else knows about. Well, I don't think there's anything truly secret out there. It's kind of a matter of like surfacing interesting ideas. I'm trying to think. Oh, one interesting trend that I'm actually very interested in is how people are rethinking the nature of how science is done, especially in terms of like the tools. Like for example, in at the level of science, and one of the basic technologies, and using technology very broadly, is the journal article. Right. Science is published primarily as a series of journal articles where people publish their research as journal articles.
Right, and you have to publish.
You have to publish. But the journal article, while it has a very set structure, in its basic form, it's like this very old technology. I mean, the first scientific journals were centuries old, and obviously, the actual scientific advances have progressed far beyond the journal, and so there are a number of people rethinking how science should be done, whether or not we need to rethink the structure of journals, whether or not we need to rethink how we collaborate, how we share data and make scientific advances and the data that underlies them more open and more shareable and allow for greater reproducibility of science and actually being able to replicate certain of the results. Because oftentimes, increasingly as science is more highly computational, you can't include all the details within a paper. And there are some people who have even spoken about a scientific paper in a journal article is almost like an advertisement for the science as opposed to the actual research itself. And so there are a number of people, there's actually many, and there's like a whole movement of open science and kind of science 2.0 and rethinking all this, kind of rethinking the way that science is done. And I find that particularly exciting. And so that is one of the areas that I think a lot about.
All right, let's take a couple more final calls here before we wrap up. Mike in Ohio. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, good morning, George.
Hi.
Good morning, Samuel. Samuel, I was looking at buying an Ubuntu phone out of Europe, but I wonder if there's ever going to be a day when we could buy a phone, like a smartphone, and we could put whatever operating system we want to on it. Like if we want Windows Mobile or Android or Apple or whatever, and that would like increase our choices. And for senior citizens, maybe we could put a real easy graphical interface on there for somebody that's older so they could use the phones more and more and maybe make technology more simpler. And thank you. I'll take my answer up here, Georgia.
Okay. Go ahead. What do you think, Sam?
There are certainly many people who try to kind of open their phones and allow different opportunity and kind of different options, like different operating systems to proliferate. But I think one of the interesting points he made was this idea of like allowing for technology to be simpler. And I think we see that as a very interesting trend where even though there might be a huge amount of complexity underneath, we try to ideally create a fairly simple interface for these kinds of things where it's much more intuitive. And I think one of the things, going back to the discussion of artificial intelligence, is that using certain AI techniques, if we can anticipate the kinds of usages that people want, and if the computer can anticipate the needs of the user, then oftentimes we can actually have a fairly sophisticated but seemingly simple interface. And I think that's the kind of thing that really is on the horizon, where if computers can anticipate our needs to a certain degree, we can have simpler and simpler interfaces that kind of shield some of the complexity from the user, but in a way that still allows them access.
Carol's in Columbus, Ohio now. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi.
Hi.
The key word in my question is need. Can you tell me why we need cars that go by themselves?
They say it's to prevent accidents and that insurance companies will love it and that your rates will go down and you won't have drunk drivers. Samuel, what do you think?
No, I agree with that. I think and certainly there's the desire where people can do more things on their commutes because now they no longer have to be concentrating on driving. But in terms of need, I think, safety is a great point that even if these systems are not completely safe, as long as they can be orders of magnitude safer than humans driving, and as humans, we are enormously distractible. We are far from ideal drivers, and we're actually really bad at driving, and we often think we're really good, but we are imperfect beings. We get distracted. And I think, in terms of thinking about, ideally, you want safe transportation, and self-driving cars can fulfill that need in a way that humans driving these gigantic metal boxes cannot.
Lots of things happening in the world of technology, and I think overall it's pretty darn fascinating. It's exciting, isn't it?
It is very exciting.
I wonder what our kids who are in third grade, fourth grade right now, when they get to the high school level, what will life be like technologically for them, Samuel?
That is a great question. And frankly, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be very exciting. I imagine virtual reality or augmented reality, kind of being able to actually overlay information onto the things we see in our everyday lives. I think that's going to be a big component. I mean, there's a lot of companies, a lot of people working on those kinds of things. I think, going to be an enormous number of scientific advances that are going to be happening. There's going to be some interesting trends within biology and kind of the blending of maybe computation with biology. The world, it's going to be different, but I think ultimately, as long as people kind of retain this sense of curiosity and just kind of desire to learn everything, they'll at least be reasonably well prepared to adapt to this new world. And I think that's ultimately what it is, and what is the goal. Like, we can't predict what everything is going to be, but as long as we are prepared to adapt and have a certain amount of insatiable curiosity, it's just going to be a wonderfully exciting world of technology to live in.
Let's just hope the good guys keep using it the right way.
Sounds good.
David in Moses Lake, Washington, west of the Rockies. David, go ahead, sir.
Hey, I have a question for your guest here. Coming up on the anniversary of the supposed moon landing, I wonder, does he believe that we actually landed on the moon?
All right, and today is the day, July 20th, the 47th anniversary of the landing of the moon. Samuel, I believe we landed on the moon with men. How about you?
I also do believe that it was a real moon landing. It seems like it would be too much trouble. And frankly, the number of technological spin-offs have been enormously valuable. But yes, I do believe in the moon landing.
Can you imagine what they'd have if they even had the power of a smartphone in those days?
It would be unbelievable. I think the overall computational power that was at the disposal of NASA pales in comparison to a single iPhone. It's unbelievable to think about that.
First-time caller Nick in Alaska. Hi, Nick. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Good, Nick. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to touch on a couple of questions that I heard earlier. It's where does technology go wrong and the spirituality of it. Where does technology go wrong? I think it goes wrong when it ends. And you know, we all have viruses in our computers and electricity shuts down every once in a while and people panic. And as far as spirituality, I have two kids of my own, and when I come home from work, they're all plugged in. They don't come home and say, "Hey, Dad, you know, like, how's it going?" Or they're just staring at their iPads. So wanted to throw that out there.
Well, no, you're right. It's got its pluses and minuses. I think overall the technology has been amazing. It truly has. You have to give the mind power of humans credit. The folks who have come up with a Bezos, Amazon.com, and you know, originally that was just like a book company, and then he blossomed, didn't he?
Yeah, I think his overall vision was always to make it an everything store and kind of the words of a title of a book,
right,
about Amazon, Jeff Bezos. He started with books because they were sort of, they were essentially a low-hanging fruit for the kinds of things and the kind of scaling he wanted to do for the store.
Just brilliant.
Now it has blossomed to really do everything from selling pretty much everything to selling computation to other companies and computing power.
Sam, the next time there's some cutting-edge technology, get a hold of us, okay?
Sounds great.
The book, Overcomplicated. Up next, we're going to be talking about the work of the late Zechariah Sitchin. MJ Evans joins me. We call her Chris on Coast to Coast AM.